Sports Ethos New York Knicks podcast, Andre Gallagher. We got to get into this game tonight. I got to share some thoughts. You hear Embiid has a migraine all of a sudden. He's got a little headache. All right. It's legitimate. This guy's been a warrior the whole series, I guess. But I hope you all realize he's going to play. All right. This is just another attempt to get sympathy. I'm hurt. I'm a warrior. You can see through it, right? I hope you all can see through it. He's going to play. And I know most of you don't really care if he plays or not, because you're really confident. And I'm confident about this game. If you listen to the show, you know I'm not an overly confident fan in general. And I wasn't overly confident coming into the series. I take nothing for granted. I know all of you are cocky. You know, you got your chest puffed out. You see 3-1. Teams don't come back from 3-1. Listen, all that needs to happen is the Knicks lose game 5. And now you have a game 6 coming down the stretch. And a Joel Embiid who, if you sweat on him, he's on the free throw line. You don't want it. I'm telling you, you don't want it. A Philly winning game 7 at the Garden is going to be a hell of a feat. I agree, but nobody wants to play game 7. And another thing I didn't get a chance to mention to Dexter, but, you know, Jalen got hurt in that game. It was a knee contusion, and I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's the same knee contusion he had a couple weeks ago. He's been playing with this for the last few weeks. If it wasn't the same knee, it's the other knee. Every time you see him fall, you see him brace his knee, you see him flex his knee. He's always kind of favoring it and checking on it. That is a pre-existing knee injury that he aggravated in that last game. Win this game. Win this game. I'm telling you right now, I'll be in full-on panic mode if they lose this game. And I really don't think they're going to lose it. And that kind of plays a part in it for me. I was listening to Zach Lowe's podcast. He's not counting. Zach Lowe's been fair to the Knicks all year long. He's covered the Knicks very well. He's not counting the Sixers out at all. At all. These games have been too tight. You know the Sixers are like a plus 36 or something like that. It's between 35, 36, 37, like crazy plus numbers when Embiid is on the court. Now, I know that's the game. You can't keep him on the court all the time. And that's, kudos to the Knicks. But when their best player is on the court, they're a plus almost 40. That's not a game you want to play. You don't want to keep rolling the dice like that. You know, there are very specific reasons why the Knicks are winning these games. And that's why I tried to give Tibbs credit a few minutes ago talking to Dexter. You know, when you talk to Knicks fans who've wanted to fire Tibbs over the years, when Nick Nurse was available, there's a bunch of them that listed his name as one of the guys that they want to coach his team. There's no reason why Nick Nurse should be down in this series as the games played out. The games have been very, very tight. When you see tight, tight games like that, and the Knicks are not always shooting the lights out, that is what that is just effort. It's effort, it's execution, it's attention to detail. It's all these things that's drilled into this team all year long. And one more thing, all you minutes police folks, Dexter mentioned it earlier, all you minutes police folks, the reason why the Knicks are able to outlast the Sixers at the end of these games is because they have trained all year long to play these minutes. And I've mentioned it on this show before. Tibbs believes that the best way to prepare for the long minutes of playoff basketball is to actually play those long minutes throughout the year. He doesn't believe that if you rest the guys all year, they'll be rested for the 48-minute game they're going to have to play in the playoffs. He doesn't believe in that. And to be quite honest with you, it doesn't make sense. I don't think you need to be a doctor to know that doesn't make sense. If you spend the last 30 days of the regular season playing 25 to 32 minutes, and then you got to play a 43-minute game three times in the week in the playoffs, that's not gonna work. I think I mentioned before this series that Kelly Oubre talked about how, you know, he had to take an ice bath after playing Jalen Brunson in one of those games, a game where he played him well. And I said, there's no way he's gonna last the whole series. Right? He's not gonna last the whole series. If he had to take an ice bath after one game, what's he gonna do after playing him four or five games? And you saw Alan Hahn said that Kelly Oubre looked tired at the end of that game. And I believe it. I believe they were all tired. I believe they were all winded because they all played long minutes and they're not accustomed to doing it. The Knicks out-rebounded the Sixers in that game, and that rebound margin was almost exclusively in the fourth quarter. They out-hustled them down the stretch of these games. But these games are so tight that what's kind of happening, if I'm just going to simplify it, is the Knicks are dominating the minutes when Embiid's not on the floor, and then Embiid comes back on the floor and he kind of makes up the difference. That's kind of like how this is going. It's like he's building a cushion. You know, you see these slow starts by the Knicks in these games, and they kind of build a cushion with Embiid, and he sits down, and they kind of fight on back. You know, that's pretty much been the formula in the first half of these games. And the Knicks don't really have a good answer for Embiid, or do they? Another thing I didn't get a chance to bring up with Dexter, you know, and he mentioned it, OG Anunoby and how good he has played. The Knicks finally got an opportunity to activate OG Anunoby. He's been playing, he's been out there, but through, in my mind, a combination of Dick Nurse's schemes and the matchups that Tibbs has been using, and I'm not blaming Tibbs, I'm just saying he's been matched up on Maxey, which you would is common sense coming into the series, but he's also been matched up on some of the wings, and Nurse's schemes have kind of kept him out of the play. Or he's kept himself out of the play. One of the two. He hasn't been able to make a mark when he was playing off the ball, and he wasn't able to make a mark when he was playing on the ball on Maxey because of all the screens and dribble handoffs. So finally, you had an opportunity to activate this unique Weapon X. This guy who can go out there and guard a foot, 300-pound center and a 6'2", 190-pound guard. It's absolutely amazing. And if you watch the film study on it, you're seeing OG is cutting off drives when he's, you know, guarding the corner. He's cutting off drives. He's helping at the front of the rim. He's making plays and reads that not only do most players not make, but can't make. They can't, even if they did read it, they can't make the play physically. And now in the fourth quarter, it was almost like Tibbs threw the foul trouble of Hartenstein, because Hartenstein couldn't keep his hands off Embiid for whatever reason. He was just stuck on stupid in that game. He couldn't keep his hands off Embiid. And let it be understood, as much as I love Hartenstein, you know, he's pretty much on the floor. Every time he's on the floor, they're getting out. The Knicks are getting outscored. And a lot of that is Embiid stuff. You know, and I think I was talking to DJ from Knicks Film School, where I was suggesting that Hartenstein needs to play more Paul Reed minutes. Now, that was with a healthy Mitch Robinson, you know, before Precious was able to make his mark. But maybe Hartenstein, and I think it did play out like this in game two, but maybe Hartenstein takes advantage of the Paul Reed minutes even more than the Knicks already have. Because with Paul Reed in there, and you saw especially in game four, Jalen Brunson took full advantage of the Paul Reed minutes. You know, he was in the game when Embiid was sitting on the bench. And he was making plays, and Knicks were making plays. And I just don't know if you want Hartenstein matched up with Embiid as much as the Knicks are kind of aligning them to do so. Now, obviously, Hartenstein starts. But beyond that, Now Tibbs has seen what OG looks like on Embiid. Now you can't do it the whole game because they're going to start calling fouls on OG trying to front the post that aggressively, because he really was aggressive in that fourth quarter trying to front the post and was really effective at disrupting what the Sixers were doing and disrupting Embiid's post ups. They're not going to probably, well, at the Garden maybe, but they're not typically, especially early in the game, referees start getting real, silly with those whistles when you're fighting and wrestling that much, and the whole place is watching you fight and wrestle this guy in the post. Usually in that first quarter, you'll get a whistle here or there. On one hand, I'm like, maybe do you start the game with OG and just double team? But the double teams were effective when Precious was out there, maybe not quite as effective with Hartenstein out there. At the same time, if you keep throwing Hartenstein against Embiid, you're kind of just, you're beating your head against the wall. You're trying to hope that Hartenstein is going to get better and get more disciplined and, maybe get some stops. But Embiid and the Sixers are very hot in those first quarters. So do you start the game with OG and have Hartenstein on like a Tobias, like I suggested? It was DP who I suggested Hartenstein guard Tobias Harris, because I got no respect for the man right now. But I don't know if the Knicks can keep start. I mean, listen, I'm not gonna say I don't know if they can. You don't want the Knicks to keep having these slow starts where they have to fight an uphill battle to come back, especially if, Josh isn't hitting these jumpers and Dante's not hitting these jumpers and Knicks get themselves down by 12, 15 points, because they're not getting the same offensive output from those guys that they got in the first couple games. And Jalen is getting wrapped up because they started blitzing him and double teaming him and clogging the paint on him more like they did the first two games as opposed to the last two games. So you don't want to get yourself in a situation where you're down and you gotta fight your way back and nobody's playing well offensively, and then the pressure starts to build. You want the Knicks come out guns a-blazing, everybody playing well, hitting on all cylinders, and it starts at the defensive end. This is a defensive series. I know a lot of people are partial to the offense, and Dexter brought it up. Everybody's talking about, Jalen Brunson's 47 points. And listen, I only because everyone else is talking about it, and I'm not. I'm going to say one thing on it in a little while. It's amazing. I'm going to say one thing on it in a little while. But everyone's talking about the 47 points and not talking about the contributions from the role players, etc. And they're not talking about the defense. This is about defense. What did the Sixers score? They scored 92 points. They scored 97 points in this game. As great as Jalen was, they scored 97 points. That's enough for the Sixers to win if they scored consistently. You hold a team to 97 points this day and age, you should win that game. But they could not score. 92 points, they could not score. This defense was off the charts. This is a defensive series. In game three, the game the Knicks lost, people were talking about, oh, Jalen shot the ball too much and he moved the ball around. The Knicks scored 114 points in that game. The Sixers scored 125. The problem wasn't on offense. The problem was on defense. But it wasn't a problem in game four. And what you don't want to do where the Sixers are playing for their lives, and they've been playing for their lives in each and every one of these games, and the Knicks have responded, but they're playing for their lives, and I think they're going to come out with a different strategy than they've had the last two games, which might give them a little jolt of confidence. I think they're going to come into this game as front runners, meaning they're going to come in this game high, ready to rock, and as soon as they hit some adversity, they're going to fall apart. But if they don't hit that adversity, they're going to ride that wave all the way to a victory. So you gotta stomp them down early, early. And I don't know what the answer is. Do you start with OG when Embiid, because that they're preparing for that, but do they expect you to do it when Hartenstein is on the floor, right? Throwing wrinkles at the start of this game, that's kind of how Nurse won game three. And I give Nurse credit for winning game three. He started that game off where the first two games he was running a bunch of dribble handoffs and screens, and the Knicks were struggling with it. They came started game three doing something completely different, just posting Embiid up, not doing many pick and rolls and dribble handoffs, and so Embiid sat. And then in the second half, they started to do it. They kind of kept the Knicks off balance in that game, and we talked about it in the previous show. And I wouldn't be surprised if they came out and kind of did the same thing, but this time defensively. I mentioned earlier, I don't think Philly wants to see Brunson light them up the way they have. I think they'd rather see Josh Hart and Dante beat them than Brunson beat them. Doesn't that make sense? If you're the Sixers and Brunson's out there putting up 39, 47, and you lose this game, you're down 3-1. Who do you want to beat you to end your season? The guy who put up 39 and 47 points, or Josh Hart, or Dante, or even Deuce, who killed him in game one, but even Deuce, Precious, even Hartenstein, anybody but him. That's what would make sense to me. Doesn't make sense to me that they're going to come out and do the same thing they've been doing, even though it's been relatively effective, which is what Nurse said in his post game. It's been effective. 97 points is enough for us to win. But that 97 points also comes with, like Dexter mentioned, I think it was 25% 3-point shooting, missed free throws, etc. The Knicks almost have as much to improve on in this game as the Sixers do. You hear me talk about all the time that the team that lost the game before sometimes has a schematic advantage going into the next game because they have to adjust so many things. Whereas the team that won, they can just kind of rest on their laurels. But that's not the case here. The Knicks had a lot that they can improve on the offensive end. Defensively, you can't play much better. You can't play much better. And the best part about it is I don't know if the way the Knicks play defense, there's any, I'm not gonna say there's nothing, but I don't know if there's as many things you can adjust or wrinkle if you're a Nurse when it comes to the Precious OG Hart, Deuce McBride, Jalen Brunson lineup. There's only but so much that you're going to do. I'm not saying there's nothing you could do. There's only but so much you're going to do because those guys are just playing excellent defense. They're excellent defensive players, and they're playing excellent defense. And at the end of the day, if the referees are going to let you play physical, they're going to let you put your body on people, there's only but so many wrinkles are you going to put into an offense when guys are playing defense like that. But obviously, that's not going to be the lineup the whole game. So there are going to be some changes that Nurse throws out there on the offensive end without any question or doubt. But I think the changes he makes on the defensive end, that's what's going to decide the game. I think Tibbs and the Knicks are going to figure out whatever the hell they're going to do in offense. They're going to figure it out. You always hear ex-NBA players say by this point in the series, everybody knows what you're doing. Everybody knows your sets. But to be 100% honest with you, I do think there's still a lot of wrinkles being thrown out there from Nick Nurse. To give him some credit and to give Tibbs credit, he has answers to each and every one of them. To give him credit. But these games have been very, very tight. So although there are going to be some wrinkles, and I think Tibbs is going to counter them, they're not going to be that many of them, but the timing of when they throw it out there, it could sway the game. Like I really truly believe that Nurse didn't do anything like brand new in game three in terms of the X's and O's on offense. But the timing of how he threw it out there, it discombobulated the team. They said it. They weren't communicating. They didn't say it was because of XYZ, but they clearly in the third game of a series where they knew what the other team was going to do, they tripped up. So just it may not be a big wrinkle, but just hey, on this play, we've run this play 40 times in the series, but this time I want you to back cut. These simple things like that can be the difference in the game. But in terms of larger strategies, how these things are implemented, when they're implemented, with what personnel, there's really not much margin for error there defensively. It just really isn't. You got to be sharp, and both teams got to be sharp. They both got to be sharp. But there are some signs from Philadelphia, if you're looking at it objectively, where you're like, hey, if they do this a little differently, if they time this a little bit differently, if they wrinkle this a little bit differently, it's not like it's going to be some earth-shattering thing or something brand new. It's just the right time, the right place, the right people. That's a bucket, and that could be the difference in the series or the difference in the game. I'm not a very con like I'm not always cocky and confident about the Knicks winning every single game, but I'm very confident about this game. But from the concern side, I think Brunson, we were worried about Brunson early in the series. I'm not worried about Brunson mentally. I was dead wrong on them being in his head. If they were, he figured them out. I told you that he would be a basketball god to me if he turned the series around, and he did it. Man, this guy just impresses me a thousandfold. But if they start they start trapping and blitzing and keeping that. I think I mentioned those triangles when he's driving, where you have his primary defender, the screen defender, and then Josh Hart's man kind of making triangles and around Jalen Brunson when he's driving, making it difficult for him to score and making him have to pass. If they start doing that again and mixing up those defenses, not only is it likely to keep them off balance, but it's really putting pressure on the other guys to make plays. I think they're going to make it, but I think you're going to know if they're going to make it early in the game. I think early in the game, that's when you're going to see Josh Hart hit a three and Dante hit a three. I think that's when you're going to see Hartenstein be more aggressive on both ends of the floor. A little less confident about that one. Actually, he doesn't need to be more aggressive on both sides. He needs to get his hands out of the cookie jar. But I really see these guys coming out in a blaze of glory, and the Sixers are going to be ready. They're going to be throwing some counter punches. They're going to be right there. So if they can withstand and excel in that first quarter, this is how I think it needs to go. I think early in that first quarter, Philly's going to throw some haymakers. I think the Knicks are going to be ready, but they're going to throw some haymakers the same way they've been doing all series. If you think the positive things are going to continue in the series, you got to think some of the negative things are going to continue as well, right? And they're starting the game off really, really well because Embiid is fresh. And Hartenstein is not guarding him very well. And Nurse comes out with, I think sometimes he comes out with things that they're a little bit different. That's what I mean. Those little slight little wrinkles, right? They're not huge changes, but just enough. And I think they're going to come out. They're going to look good first half of the first. Then you get that timeout from Tibbs, get some settled. I think the Knicks start coming roaring back. I think it may not, obviously, what am I, Nostradamus? I don't know how it's going to go. I think what's likely in the most ideal scenario, the Knicks, Dante starts to hit shots, Hart starts to make plays, the Knicks make up whatever 6, 7 point deficit they might be in early in the first. They start pulling away. It starts to move into the Paul Reed minutes, and they get to about a 12-point lead going into halftime. It might get up higher than that, but then Embiid's going to come back, and they're going to make a dent. It's going to be around 12. I think that's the best, most ideal scenario, most likely scenario coming into this game, going into halftime. It could very easily be nip and tuck the whole first half. I think that's a bad sign for both teams. And if it's a bad sign for both teams, it's a good sign for the Knicks. The worst thing, what you don't want to see is you don't want to see the Knicks down 10 plus going into halftime. Because I think that's all schematic. I don't think there's any scenario where they're up 10 and it's just because they're playing better. No, it's they're schematic, I think. I think that means that the Knicks are not shooting well, they're not making plays on the offense and defensively, whatever, well, at least on the offense for Philly, whatever changes they've made are effective. Now you get to the second half of the game, and to me, that third quarter is where these games are sometimes won and lost. They're coming out of halftime with adjustments. And I think that's where Nurse is going to try to throw monkey wrenches at the Knicks. is coming out at halftime. I don't think he's going to play his whole hand in the first half. He's going to come out at halftime. He's going to start throwing little wrinkles into a lot of things that he's doing, trying to steal possessions and steal points. And this is where the Knicks' effort and attention to detail is going to have to start making a difference, because you got to withstand that punch. And if they withstand that punch and they throw some haymakers back, I think Philly is going to fold. But if they're just, you know, able to, you know, stay in the game after that halftime, you know, in terms of the Knicks, if they're able to just stay in the game with some of those plays, those Embiid minutes early in the third, if they're just hanging around, then it's the Knicks game. So either way, the only thing that you don't want to see is you don't want to see them all of a sudden start to win those Embiid minutes. The non-Embiid minutes. That's what you don't. You have to keep making a push in those non-Embiid minutes, even if you're still unable to make a push in the Embiid minute. Because I think coming out of halftime, that's make a break for Philly. It's not make a break for the Knicks unless they get down too much. If they get to hang around and they get to those non-Embiid minutes going into that fourth quarter, listen, that's lights out. That's lights out. I think Philly has to be playing with a cushion going into that fourth if they have any chance of winning. And I think if you don't see Philly come out of halftime making a run, the Knicks are going to win this going away. A tight game in the fourth quarter, you know, you want to favor the Knicks, but I think the pressure is going to start sliding to the Knicks side. I think Philly's going to start playing with a little, if the game is tight, they're the ones who are going to be playing with a little less pressure. You know, because nobody expects them to come back now. So you got to have a little bit of cushion in that fourth quarter, because you know these guys are playing for their season, and you know they're going to start getting some of those whistles when you got a guy like Embiid. So you got to have a cushion. And if Jalen's getting double teamed, triple teamed, you don't have your hero down the stretch anymore. Now somebody else got to be the hero. So you got to have a cushion. So, I mean, a bit of news, it's old news at this point, but it was announced after game three that Embiid had Bell's palsy, and I've been talking so much, I'm not really sure if I mentioned it on this show or other places, but you can see it was something wrong with his eye and something wrong with the left side of his face. You know, that's a legitimate injury. It's a scary injury, to be honest with me, honest with you. It scares me, and I actually give him more credit for playing with that injury than I do the knee injury, but it's not bothering his shooting. So, you know, God bless you and hope you get better, but it's not bothering you in the court. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear about it. The way he shot the ball in game three, I don't want to hear about your face. That said, just getting on the court when you can't blink your eye, and he's having trouble blinking his eye. You want to talk about something, you know, in your head. Like, I can't blink my eye. I couldn't focus on a basketball game. But it's not bothering him, clearly. He scored 50 points in game three. So, but I do respect that man for stepping on the court with an issue like that. And you notice how they want to tell you about his face once he won the game, right? His face was jacked up since the Miami series. Yeah, he didn't want to tell you nothing about his face until he won. Once he won, oh, my face, I can't move my face. Because if he had lost, then it sounds like it's an excuse. Once he wins a game, now he gets a chance to throw it out there, and now you can use it as an excuse for the series. It was well done. Well done. And that was kind of like the opposite with his migraine thing, right? Because now the series is on the brink, so now it's a different strategy. Like, he thinks he's like a puppeteer. It's a different strategy now. Oh, you know, we got to go to the Garden and win a tough game. It's likely we're going to lose. We're underdogs in this game. It's likely we're going to lose. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to play the best I can. But now I can say I got a migraine too. I got a migraine. I got Bell's palsy. And my knee is jacked up. That's genius. And I tell you what. I don't care what nobody says. I'm so just enough. I'm sick of hearing about MB's knee. Did you see him jump up and down in game three when he thought Mitchell Robinson fouled him on a three-point shot? You see him jump up and down like that? I can't do that. My knees can't do that. He talking to me. This guy's limping around the court, but he's jumping around like a 3-year-old in the first quarter. Get out of here, man. Nobody wants to hear about it. I'm sure his knee gets a little sore after the game, but he took the full amount of time to recover from that injury. It's not like he came back in 3 weeks. He took the full amount of time. He has recovered from that injury. I'm sure it gets swollen. I'm sure it gets sore. I'm sure all of that nonsense. But you don't see him limping until he has enough time to get down court. Then he starts to limp. When he has to run, he's running. He's not limping when he needs to run. He's only limping when the Knicks are walking the ball up court and he just made a big shot. Now he got the limp. Listen, I got nothing but respect for Embiid when it comes to him coming back from that knee injury. Period. Because he could have just called it quits on the season. But once he got here, sure, I bought into it. Yeah, he's playing on a gimpy knee, blah, 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 blah. That's not the reason why he's struggling down the stretch. The reason why he's struggling down the stretch is because he's out of shape. And you can say, well, he's out of shape because of his knee. Okay. I give you that. Except every year he's out of shape. So I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear about his knee. I don't want to hear about his struggle face. I don't want to hear about nothing. He's out there. He put 50 points on the board in game three. He was perfectly fine in game three. I don't want to hear nothing. He's out of shape. His knee is fine. He's out of shape. And associated with his knee injury? Sure. But go back 2, 3 years. All the time, he's shaking in the fourth quarter. He's always shaking in the fourth quarter. He's always shaky down the stretch. He always looks the same way. And listen, I'm just telling it like it is. He might switch it up come game five. But in the past, he has done the same thing. He has looked like he is out of gas down the stretch. And this is not the team that you want to be out of gas against down the stretch, especially if he's going to put OG and Precious in the game in that late fourth quarter like he did last night. And we'll see what he does. On Jalen Brunson, I was listening to Ryan Russillo after game two, because when the Knicks that heroic victory in game two, I really wanted to listen to anybody talk about that game. I just wanted to hear anybody's experience, anybody's outlook. I was listening to Ryan Russillo's podcast. Not to say I have anything against them. I actually don't listen to a ton of podcasts. He's going into the game and he talks about the great ending or whatever, but he talks about Jalen Brunson's struggles at the time. And literally, like, the first thing out of his mouth is the small guard narrative, which was hilarious to me because one of the reasons why, one of the thoughts that went on in my head when I was clicking on the podcast is that I always felt like Ryan Russillo was like a narrative guy. There are some guys, even though he watches a ton of games and knows what he's talking about, there are some guys that are stuck on narratives. When they watch it, they're looking for like headlines and themes. And I don't like that. Like, just look at what you just watch what you watch. Right? Like, if you're watching this Laker game, I'm watching the Laker game right now. Most people are telling you that Darvin Ham's is a terrible coach. Right? So if you're a narrative guy, if you're a theme guy, you start talking about the Laker game on your podcast, and all you're talking about is Ham substitutions and why they run this play. Why they played this guy instead of that guy. It's every game. It's questioning the coach. That's you just focusing on that one thing that it's just like a confirmation bias. You already had that thing in your head, and that's the only thing you're focused on. You're not putting in any kind of perspective. You're not doing that to Malone on Denver, right? You're only doing it to Darvin because that's the narrative floating around about him. So you see Jalen Brunson struggle the first couple of games, and the first thing you go to is this small guard nonsense. And what really pissed me off is Jalen Brunson's been to playoffs before. Jalen Brunson has cooked in the playoffs before. If you want to say him cooking when he was with Dallas was about, oh, the teams weren't ready for him, they didn't get a chance to scout what Jalen Brunson could really do. Oh, all right, if you say so, all right. But then he did it for the Knicks last year against one of the best coaches to ever do it in Spoelstra, who told you that he couldn't stop him. So you've seen a history of him playing well. A history that Candace Parker jacked up, a history that Becky Hammon and a number of other so-called NBA analysts conveniently ignore. And here's Ryan Russillo talking about, oh, scouts always say they hate small guards. A lot of scouts I know, they won't even draft small guards. And this is where you're seeing why you put length on him. He's been cooking length all year. Why is that the narrative that you go to? Because he had a couple games where he's struggling. How come you're not watching the game? And Russillo is a smart basketball guy. How come you're not watching the game and seeing that Lowry was sitting in the paint the whole game, or whoever was on Josh Hart was sitting in the paint the whole game? That they would switch Embiid onto Hart on some of those actions so he wouldn't have to go out to the 3-point line. Why wouldn't you see that as one of the main reasons why they were stopping Brunson and not just, and of course there was rear contest and there was other things that they were doing, but why wouldn't you see the whole team scheming against him as the reason why he's struggling, as opposed to, oh, he's a small guard? Why wouldn't you see the fact that he doesn't have a secondary score to burn them? Well, they actually did. His name was Josh Hart. But to actually keep them honest, schematically, why wouldn't you focus on that? Why would you go right to the small guards thing? And what pisses me off, and I haven't gone back to the show, I'm not boycotting or anything, but I haven't gone back to the show. What pisses me off is Jalen Brunson scores 39 and 47, and I'm sure he gave him all the flowers in the world. But if Jalen struggles again, which we hope he doesn't, he's going to go right back to the small guard stuff. Like it never happened. How do I know that? Because that's what happened against Miami last year. He did this to Miami last year. So people clearly forgot about Miami, and he's going to clearly forget about this next time he struggles. That stuff pisses me off. All of 1A conversation, he's too small conversation, it's all nonsense. It's all nonsense. He has proven that already. What only thing he needs to prove now is whether or not he's enough to beat the Sixers by himself. The only thing he has to prove now is if he's enough to beat the Sixers, and it's not really by himself, to be fair, but you understand what I'm saying. That's the only thing he's got to prove right now. That's it. Because you see how the goalpost keeps moving. Now, I understand there were a lot of people on the fence about who they thought would win this series. I get it. But there's no reason to feel like the Knicks had a talent advantage in this series, which is what I was touching on with Dexter earlier. I'm not going to like get into the nuance of it because Dexter mentioned like there's a lot of underrating of the Knicks players. I agree with that. But let's stay with what the perception is publicly. The perception is that Philly, the Knicks might have the second best player in the series coming into the series. The Knicks might have the second best player in the series, but Philly has the number one best and the number three best and maybe four, five, and six. That's what a lot of people were saying. There's no reason to move the goalposts on Jalen Brunson carrying the Knicks through this series. You want to give Embiid bail because of all his injuries? All right, man, you go ahead. But in terms of Jalen Brunson, if he wins this game tomorrow in game five, and he doesn't even have to play well, I'm just saying, just win the game. Don't sit there. I mean, there were a lot of people saying that the only competition for the Celtics is coming out of this series. There were a lot of people saying that. And Brunson is the so-called, is not so-called, but the questionable superstar that actually got it done. And you got guys like Draymond Green saying the jury's still out. I mean, the jury's still out on him, like the jury's still out on Devin Booker and any number of these guys out here that you've given superstar status to, but haven't actually done anything with better teams and more talent around them. At Sports Ethos on Twitter, at Ethos Knicks, at The Watcher 7, Andre Gallagher. Until next time.